VOCM presents Nightline. The opinions expressed on this show are not necessarily those of this station. And now your host, Jonathan Richler.
Good evening, everyone. Thank you very much for tuning in and joining us tonight on VOCM Nightline. You already heard my name. Tonight is another Municipal Mondays. Normally we do this two times a month, but for the month of September, we're going to be doing it every Monday. Why? Because there is an election happening on the 26th of this month all across the province of Newfoundland and Labrador. We're trying to get the level of interest up. We're trying to allow this, the marketplace of ideas, your forum, to ask councillors, current councillors, incumbents, candidates for councillors, deputy mayor, or mayor, what they should be paying attention to. So this is your show, and folks, call in tonight. You know what to do. You can send some questions along on Twitter at VOCM Nightline is the way to communicate with us. Nightline at VOCM.com is our email address. Producer Dave Williams is already on the phone speaking with somebody. He is, of course, I like to use the Game of Thrones reference. He is the wall through that which you have to pass through or climb over to get here on the airwaves. Tonight we're joined in studio with three individuals. We're joined with the Vice President of Municipalities Newfoundland and Labrador, Tony Keats, also the returning mayor of Dover. Your Worship.
Good night, Jonathan.
How are you?
Good, perfect.
Congratulations on being who you are. You don't have to do much to get elected, do you?
Well, you know, you still go around, you talk to everybody, you get your name out there, but as long as you're open and honest with people and communicating, I think you're doing very good.
Over two decades.
Yeah, 25 years.
25 years.
Yeah, 21 as mayor and four as a councillor at first when I got on.
Just incredible. So at the 25th year, do you issue a plaque to yourself from your municipality's Newfoundland and Labrador role? Or are you able to send something out, a note of congratulations?
No, usually the provincial government do 12, 16, and 25 years,
okay.
And then they do 30. And
excellent.
Yeah, so.
Wow.
So yeah, a plaque.
Let's go for a plaque. I'm into it. Also, we have joining us tonight in the studio to talk about the regional population projections for Newfoundland and Labrador from 2016 to 2036. Two individuals from the Department of Geography here at Memorial University of Newfoundland. We are joined with Dr. Keith Story, who is the director of the Population Project as a whole. Dr. Story, thanks for coming.
Thank you.
And we also have Dr. Alvin Sims, who's a co-author of the report that we will be discussing tonight, as well as being a professor in the Department of Geography, focusing on economic geography and geospatial analysis. Alvin Sims, welcome.
Thank you, Jonathan.
Did I get that right?
Glad to be here. Sort of, but that's okay.
It's not economic geography. What is it?
No, it is. We do sort of these things with regional economics and looking at the impact of changing economies and populations and stuff like this on places. So, yeah, you're half right.
I'm
just enough.
Listen, well, I'm half right. I got this far in life. That's not bad. I'm a student of politics at Memorial back in the day and spent a lot of time in the library reading political geography and the periodicals that existed at the time, because there is quite a crossover between geography and politics. In fact, I don't think you could have one without the other, really. Once you study the mountains and the rivers, what's left but the people that drink the rivers and climb the mountains? We're all connected. Okay, there's a few other things too, but I'm making it simple, and that's why I'm only half right. So tonight, folks, we're going to be discussing, and we welcome your call on this, or several calls, hopefully, on the regional population projections for the island as well as the big land. Some grim numbers out there. So let's talk a little bit about the overall conclusions of the report, and then I would love to get into the methodology. And, of course, from there, how we can use this data in our own personal lives, as well as those who are listening right now, the communications directors for the 40 members of the House of Assembly, and hopefully which will influence their thoughts, either around the caucus table or the opposition. Why don't we look at the results of the project for the first little bit, and then we'll sort of reverse engineer it. Alvin Sims, would you like to start? Or shall we go to Keith?
Go to Keith.
Keith Story.
Yeah, sure. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
What we've seen over the last, since the mid-80s, is that there's been a general population decline in the province. It's stabilized at times, but the general trend has been downwards. And this is primarily associated with three factors: births, deaths, and migration. And the main thing that has happened is that fewer and fewer babies have been born. We used to have one of the highest population fertility rates and population growth rates in the country, but no longer. And in fact, we're not at the present time reproducing ourselves, as in there are not enough youngsters being born to replace those that die. Mm-hmm. Death rates are higher than fertility rates. In addition, of course, we've had significant out-migration from the province over the last, literally forever, since Confederation. Periodically, we see in-migration, but that's often not associated with positive changes in the province. Sometimes, yes, but not always. Often, it's associated with bad times in the rest of Canada. And so we see back in the 1980s, when interest rates were 20%, things were not good in central or western Canada, people came home. Hmm. And so we have return migration rather for reasons of poor conditions elsewhere as much as positive conditions here. Recently, we've seen a relatively stable population, about 520,000 people at the moment. But the report that Alvin and Jamie Ward have produced suggests that under the assumptions of the models that they have developed, we'll lose a significant number of people, probably in the order of 40,000+ over the next 20 years. And the importance of this, I think, is that we know these numbers. We've known these numbers for a long time. These are not anything particularly new. But the importance is getting the message out as to what can we do about this? How can we make adjustments to deal with these sorts of changes? Because the changes are significant. Not only are we losing people, but the population's getting older and the population's redistributing. So that we're losing people from rural areas. We're even losing people from towns and cities along the Trans-Canada Highway, which didn't necessarily always used to be the case. And we're seeing a greater concentration in the northeast Avalon area. But most of the rest of the province, we're losing significant numbers of people. And those people that remain are getting older every day.
They're getting older every day. The roads aren't necessarily being maintained. We have access to services being decreased in some places. It's been that way for quite some time. If we look in, if we look at the methodology or at least the logic structure of how this report breaks down rural regions, there are three tiers. Alvin Sims, you want to talk about those for a moment? Because we can and obviously will discuss urban, because essentially, as this report states, this is nothing new. This is where we're going to see most people end up. I've been saying for a year now, we can't reconcile logically as a government, as a population, building a town the size of Gander in the outskirts of St. John's, as well as operating under the myth of maintaining rural Newfoundland and Labrador's population at the way it is. It just doesn't make sense. Why would we be creating this infrastructure to fill a void and maintain the numbers where we are at the moment if we're not making any more babies? So it seems that the path has already been laid out in terms of infrastructure, but how do we get from there to here? And let's look at the three-tier analysis of rural regions. Alvin Sims, do you want to just inform our listeners? If they haven't checked out the report, of course, they can go to the Harris Center website, which is mun.ca/Harris Center. And find the recent report, Regional Population Projections for Newfoundland and Labrador. But it seems that the pathway, I would think, is already being built. Clearly, you can see it, and it, depending on how close you live to it, you can probably hear it. But Alvin Sims, when we're looking at how this report analyzed data from both the urban and rural regions, talk to me a little bit about the classification of 1, 2, and 3. I found that fascinating.
In terms of urban, rural, and city regional towns?
Yes, please.
Okay. We did a piece of work, actually, a few years ago, and we did it for the province initially, and then we did it for all of Atlantic Canada. Mm-hmm. And what we did was we identified areas of that were alike. For example, third-order rurals would come up as being mostly fishing communities, areas where you probably had less than 600 people, single industry economies and stuff like this, aging and so on. And as a matter of fact, if you profile one of them In Newfoundland, you could probably find a similar one in Nova Scotia or PEI or New Brunswick or whatever. Mm-hmm. So there is, you know, some thought got into those classifications. There's an hierarchy there, and it actually says something about migration patterns. Then you go up into the city, regional towns, and, you know, sort of thing, and you would put, you know, sort of thing, you know, you like what we found, there was little difference between somewhere like Gander and somewhere like Cornerbrook. Although Cornerbrook as a university and has a few more larger government services and institutions, but structurally, if you look at the services and so on, Gander had as many services other than university than, say, as you would see in Cornerbrook. You know, so we call them small cities, regional towns. Mm-hmm. And they are growth points, if you will, and places that people will go to first. Then we have, you know, sort of thing, within that sort of a different orders of rural, like first order rurals, they would be the Bonavistas of the world, you know, sort of thing. And what I mean by that is a Bonavista would have a regional healthcare center. It probably has some government services. It has a college there and so on. And it's a tourist destination. It has a fish processing plant that is in operation, you know, sort of thing and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. It has probably a car dealership and services, you know, sort of thing. And they typically are in the 2,000, 3,000 plus range, you know, sort of thing of that. Like in the Bonavista region in general, I think there's close to 7,000 people.
Right.
Now, what we've noticed happening over time, because I've been at this for a long time, I've been looking at population and regional economics and regional classification for the last 25, 30 years.
As long as Tony's been in office.
Pretty much, yeah. Yes. And there is a pattern here, much like what happened in the resettlement era in the 60s.
Okay.
People went from a smaller place to a slightly larger place. And eventually what's happening now, and we're seeing that, like, I've had students who just finished a year ago, finished a thesis looking at the mobility of and migration of people with chronic diseases. They move to places where there is the appropriate health care for their stage of their disease, for example. Mm-hmm. And that's another migration pattern that we don't even talk about.
Right.
So what will happen is that what we see happening, there's a hierarchy to the movement. Someone may move from a much smaller place, say 200 people, to a place of maybe 1,000 people initially. And then there's a trickle-down effect. And then they eventually, there's not enough services there, they move to a larger place. Now, this is a global phenomenon. It's not just in Newfoundland that that happens.
I'm glad you raised that point.
You know, sort of thing. As a matter of fact, you go anywhere. Like, for example, a good example is in Ireland. Back in Ireland in the 1970s, I think it was, the median population for a village was 500 people. After they reorganized and encouraged people to move to larger towns, the median population now, I think, is in the 2,000 or 3,000 level.
Okay.
You know, sort of, and that says something about capacity and services and delivery of services and so on. Mm-hmm. You go on the prairies, you know, sort of thing. When I was a student out there, I looked at rural communities. And as a matter of fact, when the grain elevator disappeared, the town ultimately disappeared. They removed the post office, the school, and they moved to the next nearest larger town. So it's just an evolution, really, of population, the economic landscape, the cultural landscape, or whatever, you know, sort of thing. But here, I think there are certain things that prevented, like we had this big massive out-migration after the COD moratorium. We lost a lot of people. A lot of communities did not rebound. As a matter of fact, I was involved in a study looking at resilient communities. And what we found at the end of the day was that not many communities rebounded to what they were before the moratorium. They were already 40% down, and they didn't gain back that 40%. So you're already operating at a net deficit, if you will, in population and other things.
Sure.
And so that laid the foundation. Then all of a sudden, what was left behind, like Jamie Ward did a thesis and looked at the migration of labor markets, it was the young, the skilled, and the mobile that left, and the older workers were left behind. And so what we got is already, you know, that sort of the fate was that these would become aging communities. And now that is now almost 20 years ago.
Fascinating. And that was during the time where there was federal money to retrain individuals who, yep, who lost their livelihood through the moratorium. At the same point, we had the younger generations being that mobile labor force. And that's something we'll get to later on, yep, in the show, looking at how this report can influence discussions and hopefully policy changes on the labor markets themselves and how we can either fine-tune them or, as someone said earlier before the show began, adapt to the new reality. So we're going to take our first break. Folks, we are accepting phone calls tonight. There were a few which we are planning to take, but there is lots of room for you if you would wish to speak to us about not only regional population projections, but whatever floats your boat, either municipally or otherwise. We're very interested and excited to hear from you tonight. We'll be right back after this.
VOCM's Nightline. Call now, 273-5211 or 1-888-590-VOCM. This is Nightline on VOCM.
Welcome back to the program. We are joined in studio with one retired and one current professor with the Department of Geography, Dr. Keith Story, who is the director of the Population Project with the Harris Center, and Dr. Alvin Sims, one of the co-authors of the report that we're discussing tonight, Regional Population Projections for Newfoundland and Labrador, 2016 to 2036. Also, to my left in the studio is the vice president, the current vice president of Municipalities Newfoundland and Labrador, Tony Keats. Gentlemen, thanks again. It's been a very interesting first segment. I would like to continue our thoughts before we go to our first call. Josh Taylor, someone who is actually teaches in the Faculty of Business at Memorial University, but also a semi-regular guest here on VOCM Nightline to discuss ideas of diversifying our economy in actual terms, as well as we've touched briefly on issues of population. So let's, before we bring Josh into the discussion, let's talk about the methodology used for the population forecast from 2016 to 2036. Because, Alvin Sims, what I've read in this report is, and of course you can see the map, I think, on page 2 or page 3, is the regions that which were studied. And it's quite detailed, and it's actually a great map to orient yourself as to where you might be. And then you can find out which regions are referenced and go directly to those pages. So we're going to talk about one region shortly. But Alvin Sims, just give us the breakdown or the ideas of why you've chosen, or this report, you and the co-author decided to focus on these particular regions. How did you create them?
Okay, there was actually a structured purpose behind this. Mm-hmm. Number one is looking at the data, looking at volatility of the data to start with. And then, for example, if you select an area that's too small, for example, and numbers become small, and then you get a lot of volatility in births or deaths, and it just doesn't give you a stable modeling platform, if you will. Secondly, we actually combine some ideas that we had on our tiers of classification of regions. We call them functional economic regions, if you will, mm-hmm. Based on labor markets and commuting and other stuff and services. And we also use the Newfoundland Statistics Agency, who does an awful lot of work as well. And we talked to them about things, about our migration models and stuff like this or whatever, because that's a bit of an issue. Mm-hmm. What we try to do is develop a geography that can be decomposed down to another level if we wanted to, or built up to a larger area when required. And also we wanted stable boundaries so that we can actually track changes over time. So we've developed methods, if you will, that can take data from 2001 to 2016. We can standardize it by geography, make everything all match up, and actually be able to compare and analyze the differences and the trends and so on over time. Okay? Mm-hmm. And yet, a sort of thing. And one thing, none of these areas have a population less than 1,000 in them. Okay. As a matter of fact, there's one area that we did that's kind of small, but it was a result of another study we did on Labrador, looking at the Grenfell, International Grenfell Association, was that they wanted Labrador divided into 5 regions, and we put the Labrador Straits in there, sort of by themselves. When in reality, if we look at the population structures in southern Labrador and the Labrador Straits and so on, you would find that there are many similarities there. Sort of thing. If you look at the results from southern Labrador, right, and for the Labrador Straits, other than the smaller numbers, the trends and the age structures look very similar.
Okay.
And sort of thing, right?
Labrador overall is going to decrease or maintain its stability? I can't recall.
I think Labrador has the potential, I think, as long as the resource is old and the commodity price is old and the mines, mm-hmm, stay open,
right,
sort of thing. You got central Labrador, which is basically Apple Valley, Goose Bay, and so on. Is that actually, although there would be a slight decline in Labrador overall, I mean, it's not bad. Like, it's better than most places on the island portion of the pot, except for the Straits and for the southern part. But the other parts, like the northern part of Labrador and, mm-hmm, so on.
Keith. Okay, thank you. Keith Story.
Yes, in terms of Labrador, yeah. one of the things that's really very interesting about Labrador is, yes, there will be somewhat of a decline, probably about 7% over the 20-year cycle that we're talking about, but the tremendous variation within Labrador. Mm-hmm. So as goes the iron ore industry, so goes Labrador West. North coast of Labrador, a large Aboriginal population, a young population, birth rates are still high. By contrast, the Straits and the Labrador South Coast, a much older population, very few young people, few babies, and a rapidly declining population. Mm-hmm. Central Labrador, with Happy Valley Goose Bay, where you have a significant collection of services that are very important to people in Labrador. Here we have an area which is probably, of all of them, most likely to remain pretty stable over the projection period. So to give one figure for Labrador is actually quite misleading because of the tremendous variety within.
Thank you. That's important to point out, despite the smaller numbers. In perspective of the population of the province in and of itself, you're right. You look at there's a myriad of study regions in Labrador, and as you point out, very interesting shifts in both age and, I suppose you could say, functioning economies.
Yes.
And so that's fascinating. I would love to focus on the region which Tony Keats lives in, which is Dover. Is it Hare Bay? Isn't it?
No, it's Dover.
Dover.
Yeah, Hare Bay is our neighboring community.
Right, it is. But in terms of classification for this report.
Yeah, it would be Musgrave Harbor to Hare Bay.
Musgrave Harbor, Hare Bay area. Okay, page 67, everybody. I'm going to bring in Josh Taylor right now to listen in. Josh, are you there?
I'm here, yeah.
Okay, great. We're going to discuss the Hare Bay area, Musgrave Harbor region right now in terms of population forecast, and then I'd appreciate some input from you at your convenience. So, Tony Keats, you've lived in Dover for the majority of your life.
Mm-hmm.
You're, therefore, boots on the ground, so to speak, in terms of looking at the data for your region and being able to interpret it. How did it feel to look at the numbers as to where you live put down on paper?
It's a little frightening if you just look at the numbers in general. But when you look at the overall, the reasoning or the numbers or what's behind the numbers, it's not that startling, because over a period of years, when you live in communities or live in areas, you notice a little bit of shift, in deaths and births and people migrating outside. But to look at the numbers, just to look at the numbers for general, you're looking at we got a little over 7,000 people there now. In 2036, you're looking at 5,800. So you're losing close to, if you look at it generally, you're losing pretty close to 30% if you're looking at it the historic point of view. The natural survival point of view, you're looking at a little under 20%. So it's not surprising, but it's what we do with the numbers, Jonathan. Is what we do with the information from here on is the overall is what we want to get out there.
So you look at this from a position of being mayor of Dover. You can look at the numbers and absorb it in one way. The province can look at it and absorb it in an entirely different region, not region, but rationale.
Sure.
So this should open up lines for communication. This, if you are looking at this from the outside, from a non-governing perspective, such as Josh Taylor, mm-hmm. might lead to business decisions for entrepreneurial projects. Josh, I'm curious, if you looked at, and I know you have because you're that kind of nerd, when you look at the numbers for the population spread and decline as well as increase over the next 30 years, when you're looking at this from a perspective of functioning economies, what are your thoughts?
Oh man, I see. Every crisis or every challenge for an entrepreneur is an opportunity, and I think that there's a huge opportunity in rural Newfoundland with the assets that are there. And I've talked about it on your show before, but I'll go through it again. But a lot of these areas where there's a declining population, there is a lot of built infrastructure in the terms of traditional homes and wharves and green spaces that can be very attractive for things like tourism, for seasonal living, and for startups. And, that's an area of growth that I think could be huge for us. But there's The problem is we always seem to look at these things, and this report is a fantastic way to highlight a problem. And the question is what do we do with that? What do we do with this information? If we know our population is declining, and it is, and we've got long-term challenges, how do we react, and how do we make policy around that? And I think we get stuck in the same old traps all the time of silver bullets and, you know, what industry can we bring back to employ everyone again, when in reality, you know, technology, specifically startups, specifically, you know, I think sharing economy is an important piece of it. I think experience economy, tourism, and marketing this place is a place to live and enjoy life, not just a place to come for a couple of weeks in the summer. I think you can build a grassroots economy, and you're seeing that in some places. You're seeing it in the Woody Point area. You're seeing it in Bonavista, which we talk about a lot. You're seeing some growth of agriculture in central Newfoundland that's really exciting. So I think it's what we do with the information is the big thing. But from my perspective, as an entrepreneur and as someone who advises entrepreneurs, I see huge opportunity in it. That said, there are challenges when you talk technology, notably on the information infrastructure, you know, cell coverage and things like this.
And which roads to maintain, because government has to look at it that way. It's one thing to say you can work anywhere, but can we provide opportunities for you to work anywhere? I think that's a hard reality. Tony Keats, what are your thoughts?
I agree with Josh. Is that we look at the numbers and we'll, you know, what we do with the numbers from here on. When you're looking at what kind of industry you're trying to bring to your community, or you know, what kind of spin-offs you're trying to do there, especially in the tourism markets or in the labor force, you know, in Dover and in our area, you know, we highly depend on the fishery. You know, we have several plants within that region. And one of the things that we got to look at is the employment part of it, and you know, how do you get your workers, and how do you keep your workers there employed and making a decent living? So I think what Josh is saying is right, is how we take the numbers from here on, and that's how we as municipalities must look at different information. And if we don't use this information, you know, we're a little bit foolish, because we got to look forward to what we do with it and go to the provincial government, federal government with this kind of information on the numbers.
Alvin, when you're Alvin and Keith, maybe thank you, Tony. When you're looking at the ideas of where people are living and where they were going to live, and frankly, where they're going to go to the greater glory eventual, because we have an old population here in the province. I think it's the oldest right now. We beat Quebec in this, finally, and this is nothing to be proud of. We are of a certain age, and we can't reverse it. So until we build a time machine, we are facing an interesting crisis or challenge. I would prefer to use that word. When it comes to infrastructure spending, this must be an interesting intellectual exercise. I know, of course, you're not a body that recommends anything, but it would be interesting, no doubt, to hear your thoughts on how it is that we can redistribute or distribute tax revenue when it comes to regions that are getting smaller.
Okay, I'll tackle that one first. I think the initiatives to start some sort of regionalization process, which I think is 30 years behind to start with, and the idea of, to a certain degree, and the issue comes to centralization and access and all these other things. But there are within many regions or areas within Newfoundland, there's already places, as Tony pointed out, that has, for example, the existing infrastructure there. They probably have a community like Wisleyville, for example, and Centerville, Wareham, and Trinity. There's a certain amount of infrastructure around there. So if you're looking at a core area for your region, well, then you look at the existing stuff and you look at, okay, who has access to this and how far away are we, and is it reasonable, you know, for that to happen?
Sure.
But the thing comes to capacity. But what kind of services? Do you now need a healthcare facility with 200 employees, or do you need some other kind of facility with 100 employees? Mm-hmm. And these are some tough choices that have to be made. You know, so there are other parts of Canada, you know, where they have county systems, whereby they have a county center that has the regional hospital, has the services, and everybody goes there for those services. And also the idea of sharing services and so on. I've been working on this idea of trying to get some sort of regionalization going in this province for a long time. And we were laughed at 10 years ago, you know, not laughed at, but sort of like, oh, that was nice and let's put it aside. But I think the realization has come, and I told someone, if you don't regionalize, there's going to come a point in time, there will be no one here to regionalize with.
Josh Taylor, what are your thoughts on that? Alvin's raised a very interesting, powerful point, and it's hard to say these things to a government itself that goes through cycles. But there it is. You know, reports are only worth anything if they don't have dust on them.
Absolutely, the regionalization piece I think is huge. I think not only do we need regional governments to form and to come together in regional bodies to provide services, but that's inward looking. We need to have a regional approach to outward looking and immigration and attracting people to the place, because, you know, hold the gasps, but people in St. John's don't necessarily understand everything that's going on the West Coast or what's going on in Labrador, yet that's where all of our policy seems to be being made. We need to be a little more realistic on services as well in rural areas, but there's an opportunity now with IT infrastructure to really expand that. But this piece of work now, and we're starting to have a few discussions around what's the next step. This piece of work identifies a demographic issue. My next question is understanding it and, like, what's driving it. And we have these silly, I think, myopic, simple views on what's going on in Newfoundland. And I hear it all the time. People say, well, people are leaving for jobs. Well, I'm 37 years old, and most of my grad class from Grand Falls, Windsor, is living away. And when I see them, you know, we come home at the Salmon Fest or I see them at a reunion and we get together, none of them are away for economic reasons. They're away because they like the lifestyle in Vancouver. Some of them are down in the United States and they like the weather. Okay. Some people are over here and they're just doing something cool. Or they're a certain type of chemist and they can only work in this place.
Right.
And so there are varied reasons. We have this economic silver bullet argument. And it's so limiting. But it also keeps us competing on economic grounds when we should be competing on place and culture and strength that we have. You know, we're never going to be able to have the IT employment that you're going to have in California, but we have a lot of advantages over California in different ways. And understanding your customer, that customer being the person that's going to move and enjoy and set up their life in Newfoundland and Labrador, that's a very important piece that I think we're missing. And just to give you another example of how we failed, a lot of times with we've talked at length about the immigration challenge that we have where people come to Newfoundland and then, you know, they use it as a stepping stone, they go on to Toronto. I mean, a little bit of look at the data. I saw a report I read a few years ago. The second reason, the number one reason was community. They wanted to be in a big setting and they wanted to be around people of their own culture. But the second, which was glaring, was transit. People come from, say, you know, Africa, they come from South America, and we got this huge barrier to them settling in Newfoundland because they just can't get anywhere. There's no transit. So it's like understanding what's actually driving this is next. And it's like there's a lot of misinformation in this space, and I think that's where this work, I think, should go.
Interesting thoughts. Thank you, Josh. We're going to leave it there. I can say one thing. If we're going to see a 15% increase in population over the next 30 years on the Northeast Avalon, transit would be a logical choice to focus upon in terms of making it easier to get around. Goodness knows we all don't live in buildings which are 40 stories. We're experiencing some sprawl here like I never thought would be possible. Josh, thanks for tuning in. Thanks for your input, and we'll speak with you soon.
Yeah, good luck, guys. I'm enjoying the show.
Thank you. Good night.
Bye.
Interesting questions and statements on Twitter before we go to the break. Robert Chalk says, do nothing. Let it happen. Most of the outport has nothing to offer going forward. I live in one of the dying communities, and gone it should be. So do nothing and just sort of wait till it happens. I think one might cynically observe that is probably what government has been doing for decades. We can certainly discuss that in ambiguous or clear terms after we return from this break.
VOCM's Nightline. Call now. 273-5211 or 1-888-590-VOCM. This is Nightline on VOCM.
Hi. The show is going fast as always. It's quite fascinating. Talking about placemaking, talking about making sure that there are people to make those places all across the island. Population projections. For Newfoundland and Labrador, regional population projections 2016 to 2036. It's a very, I think, interesting and stimulating report. You can find it at mun.ca/Harris Center. We're going to go and include in our conversation right now with Dr. Alvin Sims, Dr. Keith Story, and his worship, Mayor Tony Keats of Dover. We've got Terry Hussey on the hotline as well. Mr. Hussey, how are you?
Good evening.
Good evening. Your thoughts on what we've discussed so far at your convenience, please.
Yeah, it's been an excellent discussion so far. I just want to compliment the folks from the Harris Center on the work that they've done recently. Just a tremendously valuable and important piece of work for the province. I think a lot of people sometimes, I don't know, they hear something that's so policy dense and they get a little, that's like the eyes glaze over and they say, oh my God, this is so wonkish. But this is so important for us because this essentially defines the course that we're on. If we do nothing, this is where we're going to be in 20 years. And you think about all of the challenges that we face fiscally today, imagine how much better off we'll be with 40,000 less taxpayers. And where are the government revenues going to come from to help move this place forward, when in many places it seems like we're barely treading water? And what I find very interesting about this is it's essentially defined what our future looks like in 20 years with no changes. And so you and I and Josh have had discussions about, you know, what happens if we look at the opposite? Like, why can't we dream of a Newfoundland and Labrador with a million people living here? And the gentleman brought up some excellent comparisons to places like Ireland, how people, communities moved from villages of 200 to 500 to 1,000, and the process that region went through to get there and the population that happened. And it's not, it's a redistribution, but can we also redistribute, get more regional and actually grow? And I'm wondering if they have any thoughts or if any of their research has shown areas that were able to reverse the trend and actually, you know, take a positive approach to dealing with a dwindling, an older demographic, out-migration, and actually reverse the trend and move things towards positive migration.
Gentlemen?
Well, one example that we can take is Germany. And the old West Germany, if you like, is essentially suffering from exactly the same problems that we have. We have communities where people are aging and the population, the labor force in particular, is declining. But of course, at the same time, you've got tremendous immigration. And that's not been easy to absorb. But there is the situation in which you've got a new young labor force coming into the country, and if that can be accommodated and absorbed satisfactorily over time, and they've done it once with East Germany, mm-hmm. There's no reason why they can't do it again. Mm-hmm. Difficult growing pains and so on and so forth, but there's an opportunity. Now, that's an example. Is that likely to happen here? I have my doubts. Across Canada, we are likely to see a lot more great immigration in the future. Mm-hmm. But if the choices are for Toronto, for Vancouver, for Calgary, for the larger centres where there are more opportunities, we are pretty low down the pecking order as far as choice of destination is concerned. So it would be nice to think that we could attract more people. We haven't been very successful up to this point, and we haven't really got the obvious opportunities which would encourage people to come in the first place or stay once they get here.
Mm-hmm. So the silver bullet is young people that are going to have families and, you know, work in, I guess, rewarding strategic industries that obviously would have to be here in some way, shape, or form.
Right. In that sense. Yeah. And I, yeah. Let me just add something here.
Please.
This is radio, so I look better on radio than I do on anywhere else.
But I think we all do.
The reason that I'm running this population project is that I consider myself to be the poster child. I'm old, mm-hmm. I'm retired, mm-hmm. and I'm becoming increasingly expensive to government as far as healthcare and other things are concerned.
Okay.
And I am one of many, many people that are going to be a burden on this society. More particularly, I'm going to be a burden on my grandchildren. In 20 years' time, when they're in the labor force, I hope they'll still be here working, but they probably won't be supporting me at that point, but they're going to be supporting a lot of other people. So I'm very anxious to see if we can find those opportunities for those young people into the future. And I don't want to be pessimistic in the sense that I think we should be wondering who's going to turn the lights out. I don't think that at all. I think that there are lots of opportunities. I don't think they're necessarily going to be in rural Newfoundland, but even that is a very, very broad statement. I mean, we've seen for all its issues, tremendous growth in aquaculture. We see tremendous opportunities in other kinds of resource development in Labrador and elsewhere. So there are going to be pockets of activity, but I think that most of the population will be concentrated in the larger urban areas, particularly St. John's and region. Not St. John's itself, but the region. And one of the previous callers talked about opportunities for young people, this is where they're going to be, and they're going to be in areas which are in high-tech areas, in areas which require some very significant skill shifts in our population, and which means skill shifts in terms of the teaching of those skills in our institutions. And I think that there are going to be those opportunities for my grandchildren to make a good life here in the future.
Yeah, Jonathan, he raises some excellent points. And I don't know why. It just seems like...
He also looks good, radio or otherwise.
I can't make this a partisan issue because I can't blame this on Liberals. I can't blame this on Tories. It's really unfair to do it because both parties have lobbed the volleyball of government back and forth for 30, 40 years. And all of them have essentially stayed the course and when it comes to, setting a course towards something other than their own re-election in many cases. And I feel they've tried to do things. Maybe they start out trying, but then it just ends up being about survival. And nobody really has done anything to try and, I don't know, break the cycle. And to me, and from all of the conversations we've had, I can see a vision where we can do all the things that need to be done if people will actually just start talking about what needs to be done.
Pick up the pen and use it as a sword. Interesting points, yeah. Terry. We're going to let Alvin Sims weigh in on this and Tony Keats before we go to the break in 90 seconds. So, Alvin.
Let her rip.
Tony, I mentioned that
we need
baby steps. We did a project actually a few years ago on the Burren Peninsula, and we said you're going to get smaller before you get bigger. But if you can find some way to keep that economy ticking over, and you can get full-time employment, for example, it's the bad word for some people is aquaculture, but believe it or not, places where aquaculture has gone, the average weeks for employment has gone from 26 to 42. Mm-hmm. And that's pretty well almost full-time employment anywhere.
Right.
You may have a smaller, younger population working in that sector year-round making a good living. You may have a smaller population, but you will have a good economy. Once you have disposable income, and then that spin offs other things. So you will get smaller. This train is going, at the end of the day, like unless you're going to find a new immigration policy that's going to bring in a lot of people, we're going to get smaller, as a population.
Okay, thank you.
Sort of thing. It's there.
The writing is on the wall, as one might argue. I certainly would. Tony Keats, your thoughts before we go to the news?
Yeah, Terry was saying, and especially coming from a municipality point of view, I'm sick and tired of just doing nothing with reports, just letting them, add up a little bit of dust. If we don't take this report and do something with it, move forward with it, and see what we can do, we're not dying. You look at the Bonavistas and the Fogos and so many more municipalities in our province that sprung forward just with little ideas and grow it into snowball effects. So, we got to do something. Doing nothing is no good anymore.
Thank you very much for the call, Terry Hussey. We'll speak to you in the near future, and thank you all for your points. We're going to go to the news at the top of the hour. We will rejoin the conversation right afterwards. Cheers.
VOCM's Nightline. Call now, 273-5211 or 1-888-590-VOCM. This is Nightline on VOCM.
Welcome back to the program. My name is Jonathan. We're joined in studio with the Vice President of Municipalities Newfoundland and Labrador, His Worship Mayor of Dover, Tony Keats. We also have One of the authors of the report we were discussing tonight, Regional Population Projections for Newfoundland and Labrador 2016 to 2036. That's not his name. His name is Dr. Alvin Sims. We also have the director of the Population Project, which is a Harris Center project, which is quite fascinating to follow along, Dr. Keith Story. Gentlemen, thanks for joining us for the second hour. We had a great and interesting first hour. Lots to discuss. Before we go to our next caller, here's an interesting tweet from Darren Patey, who says, in 20 years, a large number of coastal communities will not exist, and we need long-term solutions now. The Harris Center is a research body in Memorial University, located within Memorial University, that looks at, I can't do this any better than the two of you could. So tell us, when we hear things like this, we need long-term solutions now. What is it that the Harris Center is attempting to provide? Keith Story.
For this particular project, let me back up first of all.
Please.
The Harris Center is essentially a broker within the university and the community, where communities, organizations need particular expertise, and the Harris Center has played the role of finding those experts to help those individuals, organizations, and communities. Mm-hmm. But some time ago, the executive board, the directors of the Harris Center, suggested the Harris Center should be much more involved in direct activity, direct research. And so one of the areas that was selected as an area where it might be possible to make a contribution, make recommendations with respect to policy, was this question of the changing demographics, and the Population Project was born out of that. So that's the primary objective of the project, which is to make policy recommendations about what we can do about the implications of these demographic changes. And we began 2 years ago working in Labrador, and what we've done is to take the population projections as a baseline that Alvin and Jamie developed back then, and said, well, what kinds of issues need to be addressed in Labrador in particular? And so the first suite of projects that we undertook included things like a temporary foreign worker program. Now, that's not particularly relevant at the moment in this downturn in the economy, but when the economy picks up, temporary foreign workers are an essential component of that Labrador labor force, particularly in Labrador West, but also in central Labrador as well. And the trouble with the current federal program is that it's a one-size-fits-all and doesn't necessarily meet Labrador's needs. And so our policy recommendations look at what might be done for Labrador with respect to that kind of approach. So it's mm-hmm. it's trying to find things that we can act on in the light of the demographic changes that we experience.
And to find the things that we can act on, of course, by we, it's the collective. It's not only those who put our politicians into power, but it's those who are who promise to look after us, or at least look after our interests. So, Darren, that's a long-winded answer, but there are long-term solutions which are available. It's the political will that we need to examine, perhaps not this evening, but we all need to keep that in mind. Right now, following up on what we were just discussing about so much when it comes to how we look at population projections from essentially the cradle to the grave, we're speaking with Pam Anstey, who is the Executive Director of Community Living Newfoundland and Labrador. Pam, thanks for joining us tonight.
Happy to do so.
I'm sure you have a lot to weigh in with respect to population projections, and I guess we could also say managing our populations that exist currently.
Well, and I think my perspective may be a little bit of a shift from what we've been discussing all along this evening, but there's been a lot of talk about out-migration, rural depopulation, and all of that, but what happens when that happens is you have marginalized populations left behind with less opportunity or less capacity to move mm-hmm. and less opportunity. So then what happens, and how do we service people who are left, who need home supports, disability supports, other government supports, when there are less human resources within communities to provide them in accordance with the current existing models? And I know this is a bit of more of a human shift than an economics type of shift here, but I wanted to talk a little bit about that side of it, because one of the things the Harris Center report does talk about is health and you know, all of those things, mm-hmm. housing and those sorts of issues. So we need to focus, I guess, not only on who's leaving, but who's left behind. And I wanted to actually talk a little bit as well about some upcoming things we've got that can certainly contribute to that conversation. But I guess I wanted to open it up to the folks there in the studio first to talk a little bit about what has been reflected upon in terms of servicing people who are less mobile, less, I think it was, who was it that mentioned that they were aging and needed more services and things like that. So we want to talk about that side of it as well.
Okay. Alvin Sims has his hand up. You can't see you because it's radio. So I'll let Alvin handle this, and then I might be interested in hearing a perspective from Mayor Keats, who, sure. of course, lives in the in lovely Dover and might be able to address this from a experiential level. So, Alvin, let's start with you.
A few years ago, myself, David Fishwater, and Jamie Ward worked on a project, and we were looking at identifying what at the time called functional economic regions, but we were noticing characteristics about some of those regions and places, especially ones that were aging. And one of the things that we recommended at the time was that one policy does not fit all. And what I mean by that mm-hmm. is that if you have an aging community and you, as you say, is in decline, who is going to service that community and so on? And I think there needs to be strategies and some recognition that if you're in decline and you're aging, well, then you need a whole set of other policies or strategies that should be designed for that. Secondly, if you're a stable population and not growing, well, you need to have some initiative of like, how do we get out of this and grow? And if you're growing, you need to manage that in some other way. But they're all very different strategies. And we have that tendency to have one policy fits all strategy, and that's got to change. The other thing is that Keith's group is funding, is I'm involved with a project with some clinicians, and we're looking at what is the picture, if you will, of an aging population in terms of what is required for healthcare services, demands on clinicians and practitioners in rural communities, that to, you know, where you've got, community-based care versus clinical-based care and stuff like this or whatever. We've been looking at a lot of different models globally and looking at how things are done elsewhere. And there are some, you know, facts that are out there in that you have to pay attention to an aging population in particular, and especially in Newfoundland, where we have some of the highest rates of chronic diseases, you know, sort of thing. So we have an aging population, but we also have another tag attached to it called chronic disease. And basically, how are we going to manage that at the end of the day? Mm-hmm. So there will be demand for certain types of services. But at the same time, it's a well-being of place. And basically, what do you do to say to someone who's retiring and say, I want to live in Dover, for example, and what services are there for that person living in Dover, and what is the accessibility factors and all these other things.
Great segue.
And I'm segueing into Tony for
master.
That one.
Are you after my job? Okay. Tony Keats.
I'm free.
Yeah, like Alvin was saying, I mean, you know, you got to have things in your community or things in your region for that aging demographics. Especially, where I come from, in rural Newfoundland, I've been a part of the home care system now for the last 27 years. That's my nighttime job. I'm a lead support supervisor of people with disabilities. And I've been managing an home care out in my area, with five staff members. But I'm not the only one. There's a lot of residents that want to stay in their homes, that want to stay in rural Newfoundland, but want good workers. Coming from a rural area in our province, we have excellent workers who look after our aging and people with disabilities. I see it. Not as a barrier, not having things around us that a lot of seniors want, because it's what they need. So, you know, as long as we supply what they need, I think we're doing a good job there. But, you know, I see to a certain extent a lot of seniors want to move. When they get a certain age, do you want to move out and do you want to move into, you know, a seniors' retirement homes, or do you want to move into bigger centers where there's more people that they can do activities with and do more things with? So, yeah, you know, there's all depending on what the senior is looking for, and all depends on what your community is providing at that time.
Tony, that's the perfect segue. I can't even imagine a better one, because one of the really important things, I guess, that I wanted to get across today is that our organization, in partnership with the Coalition of Persons with Disabilities, is actually doing a series of cross-the-province consultation sessions on the new individualized funding policy for home supports and home care. So anybody who is in receipt of home care, changes are coming, and it is going to be more individualized changes, so which is responsive to the changing demographics within communities. It is more individualized. It is a lot more responsive to what a person wants, sure, to be able to keep them at home, keep them in their community, and not have this shift away, sure, to a foreign community that they don't really have a familiarity with. So I just wanted to put a little plug in for that. And if I could just maybe tell the dates and where things are going to be.
Please go right ahead, Pam.
Thank you. So we're starting actually this week, September 14th from 1 to 4 at Hotel Gander. We are September 18th at the Holiday Inn Express in Deer Lake. We are the 21st. We're up in Labrador City. October 4th, we're in Bay Roberts, and October 23rd, we're here in St. John's. So if anybody wants to register for either one of those open sessions, if anybody is associated with anybody who's in receipt of any home supports, it is an important thing to come out and hear. 722-0790 is the number to call. Just reach out to our office here at the Newfoundland Labrador Association for Community Living, and we will register you up for the most appropriate one. We do have an ability to connect people by teleconference if they are not in one of those particular areas, so we want to reach anybody who wants to participate. And we do have some travel subsidies available for people who may not be able to afford to go otherwise.
That's great. Pam, do me a favor and tweet out that information if you could. At VOCM Nightline. I'd be happy to retweet it to our 14,000 followers, not all of which are robots. Okay.
They're all bots, aren't they, Jonathan?
Mostly, yeah. I'm guessing a good 8,000 of them are not real accounts, but I don't have the time to look through them. So, yeah, there you go. I'll just brag about 14,000 things following me, and we'll just leave it at that. Thank you for your time, Pam.
Thanks for the time.
Pam,
I appreciate it.
Appreciate it very much. Good night.
Bye-bye. Thank you.
So we're looking at this, and let's go back to our microcosm here as we look at the entire population of the province. Let's focus again on in Dover and apply what we were just discussing with Pam for the next minute or so. Tony Keats, how do you feel about this?
You know, I, to be honest with you, Jonathan, I feel comfortable, you know, knowing that, you know, the area that I come from, seniors and people with disabilities and people that you know, want to do activities are pretty well, you know, looked after. But I know, you know, when I become senior, I know that I want to do different kinds of activities, and do my community or do my region supply what I want? And I think that's where I'm looking at it from now, because, you know, in 9 years' time, I will retire. But I will not retire.
How old are you?
I'm 50 now.
You're going to retire at 59?
No, well, 60 I'll retire. I'll be soon 60.
Jeez,
I'll soon be 51.
Okay.
But like I said, you know, I will not retire.
Right.
In the sense of the word retire. I don't think anybody retires anymore.
I don't think so.
Right? Mm-hmm. You know, because I still want to be employed. I still want to do something. I still want to be active. So I think that's what we got to look at now. I know as it came up last week there in when we done the announcement, you know, when you retire, what do you do with your retirees? You know, what do you want to do in your community? You know, because we got retirees or seniors that we can put to use. You know, we can make them, you know, give them a sense of well-being, a sense of what do you want to do in your community? You know, because they do want to do stuff.
Absolutely.
You know?
I volunteer for a couple of boards, and I'm the youngest by far, by
decades.
But
if Jonathan, if we're looking at
for the most part,
from a point of view of, oh, what are seniors? they don't want to do nothing. We, you know, we're just going to leave them alone. There's no such thing.
It's a terrible idea.
There's no such thing.
It's a terrible perception.
Exactly.
But it does exist, and that's a very interesting point. Just as we look at our youth and call them a bunch of pajama wearing pants, lazy bums, you know, they are humans as well, and not all of them fall into these ridiculous stereotypes. It's the same thing on both spectrums, and this is a very interesting point. Yeah. Keith Story, you want to comment on that before we go to the break?
Yeah, I completely agree. There's a very large, well, what do they say? To, you know, 60 is today's 40 or something? I don't know, some number like that, if only. But there's no question that there are a very large number of older people there who have a lot of experience. They have a lot of knowledge and skills which they can pass on to others, and so encouraging them to be mentors of younger people is one thing, but engaging them in a whole range of different kinds of activities and services is another. Whether it's direct employment, we see building supply stores now that hire older people. And boy, they're the ones you look for because they know. They know. They're not high school kids who have never picked up a hammer before.
That's right.
But they can put the proverbial rear end in a cat in many cases.
And,
right?
You can read a measuring tape.
Absolutely, yeah.
Take that, youngster.
But so here we have a resource, an older population which we could do a lot more with. Sounds very patronizing, but to engage older people in a lot more ways than we presently do, I think it would be a very useful thing.
I'd like to think that yes, the largest demographic who uses social media, we all know this, are ages 45 and older, to keep in touch with their grandchildren. I would like to think that this is a boring thing to do for most of the day. You can get that out of the way in 20 minutes, and then you are still a productive human being, and you have things to offer.
You got a lot to offer.
It's how we integrate that and how we realize that. That's a fascinating conversation, gentlemen.
Yeah.
We'll leave that for another night. We're going to go to the break afterwards. Maybe we're not, because Leo was in the queue, and he wants to talk about seniors. That's his favorite topic, because he's one of them. We'll be right back.
VOCM's Nightline. Call now. 273-5211 or 1-888-590-VOCM. This is Nightline on VOCM.
Good God, this show goes fast. We're going to line number one. We're speaking with Leo. How you doing, Leo?
I got to laugh at that one. Keep him healthy and happy. And they got one here. He might be healthy, but he's definitely not happy.
I was going to say, Leo, are you happy? you're calling the wrong program, buddy. What's on your mind, my friend?
You know, we're forcing seniors. We're forcing them out of the urban or out of the outports and into the urban areas. Mm-hmm. We're forcing. And
we as a government, or what do you mean?
Well, what we're doing, we're giving, say, wealthy developers money to build apartments and build personal care homes, and this is where seniors are ending up, because the small communities don't have the doctors or the post office or the bank anymore. And I'm going to give you a scenario now. I mean, say, take two people, and I'm talking thousands. There's thousands like them. Mm. Say, for instance, they're in their late 50s or in their mid-60s. They're seniors. Mm-hmm. Okay? Now, neither one of them qualify for Canada pension. I mean, say, she was a housewife and she reared up her family. He was one of the people, and there was thousands of them that went around and built a house and built a boat and planted a few vegetables and caught a few fish, and he never got no Canada pension for it. So now he ends up at 65 with just a basic pension. Which is $1,100, around $1,100, isn't it? It is.
I'm not sure.
Now, between the two of them, their income is around $2,200 a month. Now, one of them gets sick and passes away. The other one is left, whether it's the man or the woman, they're left with $1,100 or $1,200 a month, and they got their home, and they can't afford to live in it, so they go into one of these personal care homes, and they become a vegetable. Now, up to this point, they are productive citizens, mm-hmm. but now they're no longer. One is dead, of course, and the other is forced into the urban area and into one of these. Well, if she can't afford an apartment, she's forced into a personal care home, or he is. And this this is where the people are coming in. Look, I've got a problem. I sat for 1 hour, or just the best part of 1 hour, into a senior citizens club in Cornerbrook. And I listened to Andrew Parsons, the Minister of Justice right now, telling me and telling the group that was there how they were going to help seniors if his party was elected. Now, I've come up with a problem. I won't go into it. There's something else. But this last 2 or 3 weeks or last month, I've been trying to get hold of a lot of people in government. And if you're probably the host of an open line show, or you're a professor or a doctor, and you phones, say, Eddie Joyce or Jerry Byrne or Lisa Dempster or somebody like that, you're going to get, you know, you're going to get put through.
Or put on hold.
For me, I've this last month or so, how many times have I phoned in and the phone, and what I hear is this: you have reached the office of the honorable member. We are unable to come to the phone at this time, but leave a message and we will get back to you.
Okay, so Leo,
listen here. I'm 82 years old. I'm a senior. I'm qualified.
You're a super senior at 82.
Damn right I am. Mm-hmm. Yes. But this is what we're doing. I mean, say, and we're taking our seniors, they're not going to be allowed, they're not going to be able to live in their own homes. They're, even the two of them, I mean, say now, with everything, the rates that are going up now and the way things are going now, they're not going to be able to live in their own home, and they're getting into small communities, and the small communities are dying. And there is only one solution for us, for seniors. I know it'll never happen because I've said it before and I say it again and again and again.
What is it?
There's only one way for us. We unite and we become a body and we go to somebody and we say, okay, we back you. You get our vote, but you're going to answer to us. Not like we have done in the past. I mean, say we've given people our vote, but they don't acknowledge us no more. They don't acknowledge us.
And you're the strongest voting block, and it always surprises me when this idea comes up. And you know, I can't speak to this issue because I'm not there yet. Hopefully I will one day. But there has been conversations on this program put forward by some that lobby group should be formed, a political party perhaps. And you know, we've been waiting. I think there is somebody named the seniors advocate for this government. I'm not sure who it is. I haven't heard from the seniors advocate. It's, not really sure. How about you, Leo? You're a senior. Have you heard from the seniors advocate?
Lisa Dempster is the Minister of Youth and Seniors.
Okay.
No,
but there's an advocate. There's a separate role.
There's an advocate, mm-hmm. and there's a citizens representative, Barry Fleming, and there's another bunch that was created. I think these are members that say one from Cornerbrook and one from down the coast, and there was 12 of them all together. But I never heard tell nothing about them. The fellow that was supposed to represent us, just Childs, his name was. I never did get hold of him. I put about 20 phone calls, but I think he lives in Florida. But this is there. There's no. I mean, say I didn't realize how hopeless it was that you just beat your head against a concrete wall, eh? And I have got a problem. I've got a foolish one. I'll tell it to you some other night, not tonight, because we haven't got time.
No, sir, we don't.
I mean, we don't. But I mean, this is the only way that we're going to do anything with this. From every crook and cranny, we have got to unite, and we have got to get together, and we've got to get in touch with one another, and we've got to come together, and we've got to say, okay, buddy, if you want our vote, you talk to us, and we'll tell you what we want.
All right, Leo.
Not you talking to me and telling me what I want.
That's a clarion call for pitchforks and torches. I love it. And perhaps they'll elect you as their leader, and I mean that in all seriousness.
No one would elect me because I haven't got a grade man. But this is something else, see, Jonathan. I mean, see, we have got people playing checkers and crib and looking out through the window, mm-hmm. and they are intelligent, well-educated
people. It's
funny
we're talking about that.
Mm-hmm. They have got more brains in their fingernails than half of the Somalians or whatever the hell you call it that's running this province right now. And they're sitting doing nothing, and they should be doing something.
Okay, Leo, we're going to leave it there. I'm not sure why Somalia was brought into this. But
now, that's right. Now, okay. That's wrong, I'm afraid, Somalian, isn't it? Or, anyway, simple.
I'm not really sure what you mean, and I don't want to ask. Well, so we're going to leave it there, and we'll talk next time. Thanks,
Leo.
Brain dead
is the meaning of it. Okay, brain dead.
Every human being has the right to be brain dead, Leo. It doesn't matter where you live or where you were born. Take care. Bye-bye. Welcome to the Nightline, gentlemen. So we're going to go and take a call from Labrador in a moment, but let's look at the population projections for Labrador before we go all the way to the big land. Alvin and Keith, we have noticed that there are regions which are going to benefit from population bursts. And as Jordan Brown pointed out on Twitter here at VOCM Nightline, the northern coast of Labrador is experiencing a population boom of sorts. He says that is the case. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but might be interesting to just briefly discuss with you before we go to Noreen Kareen there on line number 3. How is Labrador doing in terms of population projections?
Well, if I can respond to that one, first of all, I think we talked about this a little bit before, mm-hmm. in that there's a tremendous amount of variation within Labrador. So we feel that over time, Labrador as a whole is likely to decrease, probably around 7% in the 20 years that we're talking about. But as I think we mentioned before, Lab West will go as the iron ore industry goes. Central Labrador will continue to remain pretty stable. North Coast Labrador. The population is growing in terms of the number of children being born, but a lot of those are leaving. Okay. And so overall the decrease there, but the main losses are likely to be in those older populations on the Straits and the South Coast.
The Straits and the South Coast, right. I do recall we did discuss that in the first hour. Thank you very much for the reminder, Dr. Keith Story. Now we're going to go to line number 3, and we'll speak with Noreen Kareen, who is calling in from the Big Land. Hello, Noreen.
Good evening. How are you?
Very well. How about yourself?
Oh, good. Interesting conversation with Leo there. I think we might all be running for leader of the seniors movement in a while.
It's something that is so obvious. I don't know why it hasn't been done before, and I thank Leo for bringing it up. Noreen, which region of Labrador do you reside in?
Labrador West.
All right. So thank you for your call tonight. And have you had a chance to look at the report from the Harris Center, regional population projections for Newfoundland and Labrador?
Well, no, I haven't because I'm traveling. I'm on the island right now, but I thought it was interesting because we just came off a Newfoundland and Labrador 50-plus Federation conference that we had in Gander, and we had 425 seniors attend that. So that was very interesting, you know, to hear from 425 very active seniors from across Newfoundland and Labrador. But what was more interesting, I guess, was the representation from Labrador. There was 2 persons out of 425. So that was very interesting. I guess that just goes to say, you know, the cost of getting out of Labrador and being part of the, you know, a group such as this, right? You know, it just doesn't happen.
No, it doesn't just happen. And if it was cheaper to go to Labrador, I'd certainly take vacations there.
Absolutely, mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think the interesting part about Labrador West is, you know, with the demographic shift that we've had over the past few years, you know, we're seeing, of course, a very aging population in Labrador West, and we're seeing second and third generations in Labrador West. The history of Labrador West was always, of course, you know, you work your 30 years, you move on to wherever you are going to move on to. So that has changed dramatically. And I think now out of our probably 10,000 population, we have something like 2,700, you know, over 50 seniors in Labrador West alone.
Wow. That's a significant chunk of the population. Alvin
Absolutely.
Sims is nodding up and down quite vigorously. These are interesting numbers. And so how do we manage a population, 25% of the population, and provide them the services that they require?
Well, absolutely. I look at things in Labrador West, such as, for example, we have no semblance whatsoever of any seniors' retirement. We don't have not one personal care home. we don't have any long-term care. The only long-term care is provided is, you know, is provided by our local LG Health, our hospital. And, I mean, if you have seniors, you know, that need or have medical issues that have to travel out of Labrador, it's very costly. I mean, the cost of living, you know, of course, it rides on the iron ore. When the times are up, the cost of living is very, very high. So, like, we have all kinds of issues just in our own small area with such a high population of seniors in Labrador West.
And the projections in this report state in some regions of Labrador that the out-migration, of course, will be those who are age 55 and under.
Absolutely.
Now, this is with reference specifically to the Labrador South Coast, if I'm reading this information correctly.
Yeah, the coast is a bit different than Labrador West.
Yeah. Okay.
Very actually, there are no negative numbers in Labrador West simply because if the mine remains open, and let's say Wabush opens as well, well, then, I mean, that's a caveat for Labrador West. I mean, for young people to stay there is opportunities. So as long as the mine is open, you will keep going the way you are, you know, sort of thing. You will always have pretty well stable population. But commodity prices drop, jobs drop, but you're aging as well.
I think you're absolutely right. The comment you made about the increase in the seniors' population, the material that Alvin and Jamie have generated, the increase in the proportion of those over 50 in Labrador West is likely to increase dramatically over the next 20 years. All other things being equal.
Absolutely. So, I mean, you know, we certainly got to start looking at, you know, putting age-friendly, you know, means in our community and providing citizens with, you know, what they need to stay and live comfortably in Labrador West. And we just don't, that's just not available right now. You know, and I mean, I've spoken to Minister Hegarty when he was in. You know, I've had meetings with, you know, the Prime Minister of Seniors, Minister Sherry Gambin-Walsh, and, you know, I met with MHA Lisa Dempster. So, you know, very aware. But, you know, we have to start, you know, doing what we can, and we've got to try to start acting on that and trying to get ahead of the game. Prevention is the game, right?
Absolutely.
Thank you for your call, Noreen. I think those are excellent words to leave the conversation on as we head to our last break. But prevention certainly is the game. Really appreciate that. Thanks for coming all the way to St. John's. Or was it St. John's or Gander, did you
Gander,
say?
With Gander.
All the way to Gander. Well, that's lovely. Listen, I spent some time in Gander a few weeks ago on my way to Burlington. Great spot to sit down and take a rest. I hope you have a safe journey back home, though.
They did, and again, you know, hats off to the people in Gander and to the planning committee of our Newfoundland Labrador 50-plus Federation. They did an awesome job. You know, it was a great networking session. It was a very educational session, lots of information, some great speakers for seniors. So, you know, it was an awesome conference, actually.
Call me back sometime. I'd like to talk about the 50-plus Federation. It's something that I need to learn more of, and maybe we can help increase interest for membership. Right now, though, Noreen, we're going to say goodnight. So thank you very much for the call.
Perfect. Have a great evening.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. We're going to go to our last break. Can you believe it? That's how fast it goes, gentlemen. We'll be back, and we're going to be discussing some municipal issues as well with Tony Keats, who is the vice president of Municipalities Newfoundland and Labrador, about elections that don't even have to happen. We'll be right back.
VOCM's Nightline. Call now, 273-5211 or 1-888-590-VOCM. This is Nightline on VOCM.
Thanks for joining us tonight. We're almost done, but there are some interesting pieces of information that are not covered in the regional population projections for Newfoundland Labrador, but between 2016 and 2036. This is a report authored by both Alvin Sims, who is here in the studio, and Jamie Ward, who I believe you've spoken with before on the program. However, when we look at the fact that we are looking for leadership to solve or address the challenges that this report and many others have presented to us, I find that there's some very interesting pieces of information with respect to the municipal election, which is happening in 15 days across the province. Tony Keats is not only the mayor of Dover, he is the vice president of Municipalities Newfoundland Labrador, and he's got some very interesting stats with respect to acclaimed governments. Tony, take it away.
Yeah, right now, Jonathan, we're looking at, you know, at least right now, our numbers are showing us that we got around 42%, and that's, you know, 97 councils have, you know, been acclaimed to date. You know, we're looking right now that this is overtaking our last stats from our last election. Mm-hmm. When everything comes in from the other municipalities that probably have been acclaimed, or mayors or councillors have been claimed to councils. We're looking at 28 mayors have been claimed so far. 28 mayors. I mean,
including you,
including me. Mm-hmm. Yeah, including we were all acclaimed in the town of Dover. We got Olerud, mayor in Olerud, and CBS, Torbay, Whitburn, Twillingate, Pooch Cove, Victoria, just to name a few. Gamble, all the mayors have been acclaimed there. We got some councils out there that have been, Clarenville, the entire council has been acclaimed in Clarenville. Like I was saying earlier, off air, I heard somebody say yesterday that, they were satisfied. They were very satisfied with the council, and that's why they didn't come out, and that's why they didn't put their name forward.
Okay.
But not being, I like to say, everybody in Dover satisfied too. But I still like to see the process where, you get people out there, get them nominated, put your name on the ballot, show up, take part in your community. And I think, I grew up with politics all my life, and you do your part, even if it's a little small part, you do something. We got, right now we had 228 towns reported so far in Newfoundland and Labrador, and that's out of the 271 that's eligible for elections.
Incredible. So that number also could increase.
Yeah.
Or decrease, depending on how the remaining, 61 towns?
We have 70.
Yeah, this is why I'm not a math student, gentlemen.
Not me either. 97 councils. I've been claiming so 42. We got 38 communities out there that don't have a full complement, actually, out of the acclaimed ones.
Now, that I think is a statistic that needs to be discussed even further. When we're looking at areas, Spaniards Bay, Marystown, Witless Bay, when we're looking at regions that have demonstrated conflict over the past couple of years, they can't be the only ones that are looking for change or looking for a change at the top or even on the sides of council. You would think that there'd be a greater increase in voter turnout, or at least candidacy.
Turnout
for candidates.
Yeah, exactly. And the voter turnout is next
we'll
to
see.
Come.
Right.
Exactly.
We'll
and,
see
and,
those
and,
numbers.
And
I misspoke.
And it's your it's your turn. Your democracy is your chance to get out and make sure that you elect someone to your municipal council. And just don't sit in a chair and be an armchair person who's not worried. Get out there and vote for somebody who you want and who can make a difference within your community. That's what I've always been saying. And we do have some great people running for some great seats within Newfoundland and Labrador. So Jonathan, get out there. Just before I go any further with the elections, I'd like to say to Noreen and Leo earlier, the province right now is going around doing regionalization consultations. And, this is their chance. Get out there and have your word on what you want to see, within your region, what you want your region to look at, especially when it comes to seniors. Get out and do something. Get out there and make sure that you're heard, especially in these consultations. Because I find sometimes, some people don't get out there and make their self known.
Right? It's one thing to approach a consultation because, of course, your words are put down on paper. Mm-hmm. It's another thing to call programs like mine and Patty Daly and have your words across the island. But really, you should do both.
Yeah.
The consultation process legitimizes your complaints.
Now, we've been doing the, Municipalities Newfoundland and Labrador has been doing the Make Your Mark campaign. Right now we're into the next phase of it, and on the Make Your Mark Facebook, there's a frame that you can do if you're running for any council. Go into the Facebook page and put your picture in the under the frame section in the Facebook frame.
Oh, that's lovely.
Yeah, yeah. Cool. And I bring apologies on behalf of Karen, our president, and Craig, they're in Fort McMurray to meetings right now. So we wish them the best, and I'm here. I'm glad to be here.
Well, I'm glad that you're here. Sure. We don't get to see enough of you, so it's excellent that you're here. We're going to take one last call. And no, we're not? Okay, we're not. Producer Dave Williams has given me the no, we're not taking that phone call. So I'm not sure what's on the go there. But perhaps Patty Daly will speak with this individual in the morning. We do have about 3 minutes left before we say goodnight. So let's do a round, if you don't mind, gentlemen, and have some final thoughts on this report and what you would like us to focus on. You can read the report itself. It's available online, mun.ca, mun.ca/Harris Center. So let's speak with one of the co-authors, Dr. Alvin Sims. This is half of your work, your body of work, for this part anyway. Of course, you have worked on several other reports with the Harris Center. What did we not talk about tonight that you want to just throw out there? Perhaps an encouragement for others to pick it up and read.
Well, actually, fundamental to any municipal planning or development is the population and its age structure. And that determines how you're going to, what service you're going to provide, what type of housing you're going to have, because young people prefer different types of housing than older people, and so on and so forth. Mm-hmm. But one thing to remember, there's a big caveat in there that says, if this trend continues. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And at the end of the day, you know, something will happen before you reach the maximum decline. It would have to. Either the place will disappear, or that something has happened and it stabilizes. They are your options. And I think read it within the context of that, you know, sort of thing, because there's nothing wrong with becoming smaller, but being economically viable and productive. That will still create a strong economy and create opportunities and so on. So I think we got to get past, as Keith says, the numbers and look at the opportunities and what's out there for us.
Two types of policy thrusts.
And also from within the OECD concept, take advantage of your environment and amenities and your resources that are there. You know, it's trying to become something that you're not, but actually take the strengths that you have and go forward with them, you know, sort of thing. We're not going to compete with the innovative class in Toronto or Vancouver or New York, mm-hmm. but we do have certain things. We have, as you say, in one case this year, it's been tremendous with icebergs and tourism and microbreweries and all that other stuff along the Bonavista Peninsula and things in Twillingate and St. Anthony and so on and Gros Morne. So, you know, it is looking at the positives and looking for opportunities, but don't always focus on, we got to be bigger to do it.
Thank you.
You can be efficient by being smaller as well.
Those are very important words. Small is beautiful. Do you remember that book? Mm. I can't recall the author. My brain is shrinking. But Dr. Keith Story, you are the director of the Population Project.
Right.
Your final thoughts, if you don't mind.
We've heard a lot about the numbers, mm-hmm. and these numbers are very important, and in many ways they're very concerning. They're very challenging. But we can't leave it there. We have got to do something, and we've got to do something positive. We cannot be inactive. We cannot leave things as they are. We've got to be realistic, and we've got to engage in a conversation between government, between communities, and with individuals to say, here's the situation, how can we best respond to it? And I think that there are lots of ways in which we can do things differently. We can be innovative, we can adapt, and we can adopt ideas from elsewhere that have proved to be successful. So it's not a give up situation. There are tremendous difficulties ahead, but I think we can do things and be very positive and very active in so doing.
Thank you. I appreciate your enthusiasm and your work at the Harris Center and on the Population Project. We're going to finish with Mayor of Dover, Your Worship, Tony Keats.
Yeah, I agree with Alvin and Keith. You know, we got to look at this report in what the report is, and we can't sit down and say that we're not going to do nothing. We got to sit, you know, we got to get out there and make this report work for us. You know, it's about, you know, what can we afford within our community, especially on a municipal level. You know, can we provide the same services for less amount of money? You know, do we want Cadillac systems within inside of our ground or that we're operating? You know, can we do better with less? You know, and that's how we as municipal leaders got to look at the situation of declining populations. You know, we got to look at regionalization. We got to look at, you know, what's the best picture, what's the best thing for us to do as we move forward. And I think right now is regionalization. It depends on what you want regionalization to look like. And, you know, like I said earlier, Jonathan, you know, get out there to those regionalization, regional government consultations, because it's coming. you know, it don't matter if we want it or not. We need something to make sure that we do survive. And one of the things, I think, one of the tools in the toolbox will be a regionalization part of it. And we must move forward. Because we got some kind of form of regionalization now. You know, everybody's doing it. But what do you want your community to look like? What do you want your region to look like? Because, you know, like I said earlier, I've been there for 25 years. I'm there for another four. And we got a lot of municipal leaders out there in the same boat I'm in. And we're there to make sure that our towns survive. And that's the part moving forward, John.
I appreciate that. And when you do get your plaque, by the way, from the government for your 25 years of service on council, I want you to tweet a photo to us at VOCM Nightline.
Sure.
Because that, I think you're a shining example of what we all should be. You've exercised your civic duty muscle. Much appreciated.
Yeah, you got a passion.
You do.
If you're involved in community, help too. You got a passion, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thank you very much for all of your input tonight, gentlemen. Dr. Alvin Sims, Dr. Keith Story, both with the Department of Geography and the Harris Center, and Tony Keats, Vice President of Municipalities of Newfoundland Labrador, also the Mayor of Dover. Producer Dave Williams and I wish all of you a good night, or as we say in Hebrew, Lila Tov.